How are we going to kick this shit off? What are we doing today?
Who are we?
Who are we? Great question.
JJ, why don't you introduce our guest, Maya?
Hey, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode. We are here with our good friend, my student, although in some ways I feel like she's more my teacher, Maya Marlette. She, her pronouns? Yes?
That's right.
Cool. Maya is somebody who reached out to me about lessons and is an absolute delight and has one of the cooler jobs of anyone I teach. She is a lawyer. No, that's everyone else. She is an editor for Scholastic. Is that
you
right?
You got it. That's okay. Right.
And that means that she gets to create and edit and refine the dreams of children worldwide.
It's so true.
It's very cool and also has an interesting chess story, which is one of the things I was hoping we can talk about today, because something that I'm interested in is people who come to chess or come back to chess, in Maya's case, as an adult, without the goals of trying to improve maximally, play all the tournaments, get the rating go up, but are looking to get something out of their relationship with chess that is a little bit different than the results-oriented thing that usually gets centered.
And Maya is so delightful. I could just see Maya in the periphery. I just sort of knew who Maya was and watched her existing and told JJ, your friend Maya seems so cool. And I just already know that I really like her. So please bring her into my life. Let me in. And she has exceeded all my expectations.
I'm so glad to hear that that was your experience, Julia, because I feel like that was my experience with you. I listened to this podcast and I was like, oh my God, Julia is so cool. Saw you on Twitter and I was like, she is so funny. She's so interesting.
Oh my God. I'm blushing.
Wow. Requited friendship. How beautiful.
Seriously, it's just a good fit. When you know, you know.
When you know, you know.
I'll see myself out.
JJ, yeah. Thanks for setting this up. We appreciate it.
If JJ is ever like, I have a lesson with Maya, I'll openly be like, that's my favorite one. Can't pick favorites, but Maya is my favorite.
You should show up. You should join. You know, we'll be having a lesson. You're just there.
I've been known to do that. Don't say this to her.
It's too late. I said it and I
She's done this before at least twice with two different people.
More than twice.
Yeah, but I'm the favorite. She just said it. What if JJ actually charged me more for a Julia augmented lesson?
Augmented. That is so charitable. Thank you for describing me that way.
Anytime.
That's the friend discount is when JJ's friend comes and makes everything worse. That's me. Hello.
I think we would have fun because here's the thing.
Obviously, we would.
Shouldn't learning be fun?
No.
Don't you? No, you're wrong.
I knew JJ would turn into a little testy Taurus over there.
That's me. Uh-huh. That's my children's book, the testy Taurus.
Julia, the first time I ever hung out with JJ in person, I was saying, look, I have beef with astrology because so many people in my life have made assumptions about me because of my sign. And I just feel like wherever the stars were, wherever they were, it's unrelated. You know, like,
I'm with you.
And JJ was like, are you a Pisces? And I melted into the ground because, yes, I am a Pisces. And now I'm like, I don't know. Maybe it's real.
Okay. Before I met JJ, I also had beef with astrology. I'm a Virgo. And every time I heard people describe Virgo, someone who's uptight and perfectionistic.
Like very type A.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's not how I see myself. That's just not me.
The only other time I've been like, maybe astrology is real is I was at a party and this guy was looking at my chart and he like put in my information and it pulls up and he gasped. He gasped. He said, this is a beautiful chart. And I said, I agree. You're so right. This is real.
You're like, actually, astrology has been correct and scientifically evidenced all along.
It's a fact.
A future episode, once we learn more details, I think we're going to have to make like an astrological star chart of chess openings.
I feel like I would love listening to that. Wait, why did I assume I'd be participating?
Maya, you are part of this. You are literally the third co-host.
You were like, we, future episode. And I was like, yeah, I'm there.
Okay, we're doing an episode.
Oh, yeah. Should we talk about chess?
What's that?
Okay.
I don't know.
Never heard of it.
I was hoping you guys could tell me.
So chess is this game that was invented by Netflix in fall of 2020.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
to sell red wigs.
Okay, cool.
I don't really have anything here. Okay, so I'm going to give you the 15-second version of Maya chess story.
Love that. Let's go.
Maya played scholastically as a child in Kentucky, Indiana, Kentucky?
Yeah, the tri-state region, Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio.
I was not going to guess Ohio was the third, but that's another issue.
Cool. People think Ohio is so far.
That's not really the tri-state, right?
Well, it's one of them.
There's three of them. They're all states.
Okay, ignore me. Keep going.
No, people say tri-state, and I know that they're just going to name three random states that probably don't even touch and act like this is normal.
Also, why would I try to chime in on U.S. geography?
I did appreciate that.
Keep going.
And was competitive and playing tournaments and super good and on a team with her friends who were also doing super good. And then at a certain point, stopped being fun. There was a coach who kept telling her, hey, you know, you're never going to get better. You're never going to be a grandmaster if you don't, blah, blah, blah. And then tournaments just kind of lost their luster. Eventually, we're like, you know what? Fuck chess. All my homies hate chess. This isn't how I want to spend my time. And just kind of thought you would never think about chess again. And fast forward into adulthood, and you're like, I miss chess. I miss learning. I miss learning something and maybe even being bad at it. But I'm really not trying to ever be brought back to that place that made me want to quit chess in the first place.
That was pretty close. That was like a pretty good recap.
But I just got the game wrong. It was checkers.
Yeah, thank you. Am I on the right podcast? This is where I'm supposed to be, right?
Welcome to Checkersfield, sponsored by Lean Cuisine.
So I learned chess in the fourth grade and very quickly was like striking fear into the hearts of children throughout the tri-state area at tournaments, you know, like
a tri-state area.
I had like a natural ability. I just took to it really well. And I reached a point that I think a lot of us reach when we're naturally good at something and we don't need to practice and try, where other people who are practicing and trying, they catch up because they have like learned skills.
They sure do.
And when other people started catching up to me, I was like, well, this simply cannot do. I need to be the best at everything that I do, you know, because that was like the kind of kid that I was. I need to like run. I was like a fast runner. I was like, I need to run the fastest. I need to get the best grades. Like, I need to be the best at everything that I do. If there's a competition, I want to win it. That was like my energy, you know?
What an instinct. I said this on the pod before, but I'm a youngest child. So for me, it was like, if I'm going to engage and have fun, I have to die to the hope of ever winning anything. It never even occurred to me that I could win something or that I would be upset when I didn't. So this sort of instinct, this competitive edge, I have a little jealousy, like that will really push you.
It's so interesting that you say that because I'm also a youngest child. And maybe where I get that is because I was so used to losing things with my brother, you know, that I was like, I know what it is to lose. And I simply,
oh, interesting.
Like, I must overcome.
I was like, I know what it is to lose. This is fine.
You know, maybe that's what it was for me. Who knows? But I got this coach who just put a lot of pressure on me. You know, it was, yikes. Don't you want to be a master? Don't you want to be a grandmaster? Like, it was stressful. And very quickly, I stopped winning, you know, and very quickly I stopped drawing. And very quickly I went on like a 3-year losing streak where I did not win a single game.
I looked this up after Maya told me this because I thought she was exaggerating, and to the best of my ability that I could tell, she was not.
Yeah. I wanted to quit chess because when your weekends are being taken up losing nonstop and there's other fun stuff you want to do, like, why would you keep going to tournaments, you know? But my school's chess team was very small, and I couldn't quit without them not being able to field a team anymore. Like, they just wouldn't have enough players, and they wouldn't be able to have a school team. And that wasn't fair to, like, those siblings. It was two siblings and me. Like, it wasn't fair to them, so I wasn't allowed to quit. My mom would not let me. And you know what? I'm glad that she made me stay in it, because one of those siblings and I, we were still like good buds. And I don't think we would be if I'd quit chess. But anyway, so there was one tournament in high school where I did make a draw. And I would say I really like pulled it out for our team because we won that tournament by a half a point. So I was like, you guys are welcome.
You're like, I'll spoil everyone a little bit.
Yeah.
Don't get used to it.
Yeah, I hope you're happy. And then because it was like a big deal tournament, it was like a citywide or statewide thing. The school made a big deal about it. And there were all these photos of us like handing the trophy to the head of school. And I was like, I participated. You're welcome. And after high school, when I was finally free, I did miss chess. You know, it wasn't like I was like, I never want to think about chess again. But I knew I was like, I never want to compete again because that took something that I really loved and had so much fun with, and it made it this horrible thing just hanging over my head where I feel like I'm not good enough and everybody else is like amazing at this. I didn't know that I had ADHD, and so I didn't know that the ways I was trying to improve were not going to be successful for me. You know, like I just wasn't set up for success in that way. But I got to college, and in college, I did actually start my school's chess club because I was like, this is a fun way to play chess. Like, this is casual. We are not competing. We like have a budget for snacks.
Right, because it's like choice or it felt low stakes.
Yeah, it was about hanging out with friends, but
yeah,
the school gives you a budget to buy food, you know? It's like, if we play chess.
Any collegiate listeners we have, I really hope we don't have anyone younger than that, but if your school doesn't have a chess club, start a chess club. It seems to be amazing, whether it's a snack budget or for some places, even a travel budget to get a team to go to Pan Ams. It seems remarkably easy at colleges to petition for funds for a student club, and you should do that because the real world ain't like that.
Yeah, do it. Do it. Play chess. Have fun. Although, if they're listening to this, they probably, their school has a chess club, I bet. Or they've started one already. Because I don't know about you guys, but I find people to play with, you know? Like,
how do you do that? I'm actually curious about this. I don't think I have a very good method. I want to hear your method.
Well, if you just talk about something enough, somebody's right. going to be like, oh yeah, I play chess. And it's like, great, I'll bring a set. Let's play. And it just, I don't know, it just seems to happen naturally for me.
That doesn't surprise me at all because you are so charming and likable. Also, anywhere you go, you'll be like, yeah, I play chess. And then everyone will be like, wow, I do too, even if I don't. Let me be your friend.
Julia, you're describing what happens to yourself.
That is not true, JJ, except for last weekend.
Except.
That's not true, except for how true it is. Well, at the moment, since we're living in the land of COVID, like the pandemic is ongoing. To be honest, I'm not playing in person very much, but I don't know. When I was in person, okay, here's something I used to do.
Ooh.
Is this bad? I'm going to say it. I don't think it's bad. Who cares?
We'll edit it with AI to make it sound better.
So I used to walk to Washington Square Park on my lunch breaks. And, you know, they have like the chess hustlers there. But because publishing doesn't pay anything, I was like broke, you know, they're like $5 a game, whatever. And I'd be like, I used to go to my friend who worked at Google. I would like go hang out with her once a week and I would steal food from the Google offices because I'd be like, I cannot afford produce. Okay. Like, I don't want to get scurvy. That's like the level of broke I was at the beginning of my career. And so they'd be like, are you a chess player? Do you want a game? Do you want a game? $5. And I'd be like, no, but I would watch their games. And I would like make my judgmental little faces, you know, like not approvingly, like, good move. Or like, I don't know about that. It's a performance, you know, because you are getting them interested in you and they get curious. They'd be like, okay, it's not $5, like $2. And I'd be like, no, thank you. And finally, I'd be like, look, I'll play you if you really want me to, but I'm not going to pay anything. And they'd go, okay, sit down. And then you get a free game, and then you go back to work.
Stealing, you know? Chess. I like this.
I mean, desperate times, desperate measures. If I'd had $5, I probably would have paid it. But I just didn't have $5.
This is an incredible journey. Can we just highlight this arc where you went from, I hate every second of this so much, and I am rebelliously losing every game for 3 years straight, and I am only here by brute parental force, to I will literally beg and plead and steal for a free game of chess. That's kind of an incredible comparison.
It's the power of chess.
Supply and demand, baby.
But I do want to clarify, I was not rebelliously losing.
Oh yeah, I'm like rewriting your narrative in my head where you are the hero on the hero's journey. Mm-hmm.
And I do like your story better. That would be more fun. But the reality is I was trying really hard every game.
Yeah, can we actually circle back to it, Maya? Because I wanted to pause you while we were talking about it. And that genuinely was my first question. How did you understand that experience? It's so easy to look back with hindsight now in the context of yourself in a adulthood, but I'm curious how the competitive pressure from the coach felt. When you're a kid, we can have such a tendency to kind of accept those things at face value and they feel so normal. We don't really have a point of reference. And then also how you understood the wins and the losses.
I would say this is like so big headed of me, but the way I understood the wins when I was winning was I was like, yeah, this is correct. Like, this is what's meant to be.
This is reality.
Like, this is the way of the world.
This is social justice.
Yeah. And then when I wasn't winning, I was like, hang on, what? Am I being oppressed? What's going on?
Classic Vladimir Kramnik behavior.
There was one, it was like a Halloween themed tournament where there was also a costume contest. And I also placed first in the costume contest. And I was like, yeah, I'm a winner. The wins, honestly, and I don't think this reflects amazingly on me, but I was a child. The wins, I was like, yeah, that's correct. That's the way of the world. This is the way that it should be. The losses, for that reason, I then took really hard. You know, I was like, because I needed to be humbled. Let's be so real. I needed to be humbled. I needed to understand my place in the world a little bit. I think that as a child, I did have this sense that I was better than other people. And yeah, that's like not
because
awesome.
You were.
Because I was. But like school was so easy for me. Like
yeah.
I was like speedy. I don't know. I felt like, yeah, everything goes my way. I must be like God's favorite or something, you know? Like, what can I say?
This is the conversation I wanted to happen organically between the two of you. So please continue.
The thing that I get curious about is the part of you is like, I need to be humbled. I'm sort of like, why? I don't know. It's like you have such an energy and you as a kid, you were probably so just lit up and passionate. We don't need to humble anybody.
And I was. But at the same time, I think that there's like a dark side to everything, you know, like the shadow side of the tarot card.
Right, like the JJ to the Julia.
Yeah.
Like the light side of that was the joy and the positive aspects of competition and the confidence that I had. All of those things are really wonderful. But the dark side would be like, okay, here's an example. One day, a kid in my class managed to beat me in a game of chess, which never happened. And I was like, will you not tell anyone?
Oh,
that sucks. And he was nice and he didn't tell anyone. But like, you know, I was like, if you are shining, that takes away from my shine. You know, like that's like the shadow side of that experience.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's like how hard the losses feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, while my years of humbling were rough, I do think that they served to make me a more well-rounded person where I'm still shiny, but I'm also like probably kinder than I was as a child. As hopefully we all are, you know, hopefully we're all kinder than we were as children.
Undeniably.
There's ways to shine that are less results focused as well. Like you can be really fucking good at chess, totally separate from whether anyone ever beats you.
Yeah.
Or you can be really good at chess because no one ever beats you.
Yeah, so true. The losing and coming back and playing again is a skill in itself.
1000%. I mean, truly. That's really hard to do, especially when you're describing your personality, Maya, as one who took that so hard. The fact that you persisted for years of that was already kind of shocking to me. And now I feel even more of that shock. That's kind of amazing.
Wow. Thank you. Ooh, I'm amazing.
No, truly.
See, this is another thing about my personality. Somebody will give me a compliment and I'm like, thank you. I believe you. You said so. So it must be true.
What about the piece, Maya? Can we circle back? What about your reaction to the coach at the time? I'm really curious because you're describing yourself as a really competitive person and you had that drive and you wanted to win. Now in hindsight, you see the pressure from the coach actually might have had some serious problems, but how did it feel as a kid?
As a kid, I knew that it was not working. It did not take very long for me to understand that his influence was affecting my ability to play chess well, but also my ability to enjoy my life, you know, because I was feeling really guilty because the lessons that I took with him were more expensive than my family could really afford. But, you know, like my mom loves me and believes in me. And she wanted to like encourage this thing that I was doing. And so I didn't want to quit because I was like, she's already paid for so many lessons that like this has to be worth it. I need to get better at chess. He's a coach. But simultaneously, yeah, I knew that his influence was just not what was going to help me be successful. And then I eventually reached a point where I was like, no, I'm done with this. Like no more money. Let's get out of this. But by then, I think, and because I was a kid, some of this was like not communicated directly to me. But what I've kind of gleaned over time is that the coach was having financial problems. And my mom was like, well, I don't, even though we also can't afford this, I don't want him to lose a student. So now like you actually can't quit because like this guy needs our chess money.
That's incredible, Maya, especially because you've already described that you staying in the chess club was your mom's worry that this other pair of siblings wouldn't have this opportunity to play chess. There's so much care and concern for everybody else's well-being, but there's a real sense where you kind of get lost in the shuffle.
Absolutely.
I will say my mom, lovely, wonderful woman, very, very caring, but she in some ways very much lives in the moment. Sometimes that's the way it goes.
I want to focus on the wrong things for a second, but I'm curious about if you remember what it felt like when you were playing these tournament games during the streak. I'm wondering if you remember how that either affected how it felt or particularly how it affected thoughts you had during the game, like your ability to even look at games when you played, which is a weird thing to ask about something from like 15, 20 years ago.
I do have some memory. I have sort of vague memories of looking at the board and being aware of time passing, like looking over at the clock and looking back at the board and just not even thinking of moves, you know, like not calculating candidate moves, just like I gotta do something. I don't know. And then when it felt like too much time had passed, it's like, I don't know, I guess I'm gonna do this. You know, there was definitely a time period where like my mind would just go blank and it was like, I can't, it's like, I'm not even playing. I'm just moving, you know?
Yes.
But there were other times where I was like, this is the day when I turn it around, you know, like this is the day where my old self comes forth. I believe in myself. Like I got this and I would try so hard and I just couldn't pull it off. Everybody else had surpassed me. But also my mental state that like, I'm super confident, blah, 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 is like false. You know, when you're that deep into a losing streak, that's not a genuine confidence. That's like a very shaky kind of performance you're putting on for yourself. And so it didn't translate into good results. If you are genuinely confident, I think that does translate into better results. And when you're like not feeling so great, it's hard to play well.
Yeah.
I think you guys have probably experienced that too.
But I think you're also touching on something, Maya, like that can help, but it's not this thing that you can tap into to give you a set of skills that you don't have. Mm-hmm. You're kind of touching on the fact that I had this natural ability and it got me really far and then it didn't get me any further. So I can tap into my quote unquote old self, like the confidence, the natural ability. But at the end of the day, I do kind of run out of rope.
Yeah. And I think that it was hard for me to accept that there were things that I wouldn't be able to intuit. There were things that I did need to actually learn. And that was reflected, I think, in my academic career as well. Like elementary school, I was like, all of this is easy. Sixth grade, I switched schools. And that was the first time in my life where I was in an environment where I just felt like people didn't want me to succeed. You know, like I had never experienced that before. And that was, oh my gosh, we're making connections here. I think that might have been the first year where my play was like affected.
Oh
I'm
my
not
gosh.
Sure, but it's very possible. Because I'm thinking of the friend that I met where I eventually transferred to her school and was on like the chess team with her and her brother. Yeah. I met her at a chess tournament, I think like maybe fifth or sixth grade. So maybe it's around that time. But anyway, that was reflected in my academic career. You know, sixth grade, I was in an environment where I felt people didn't want me to succeed and I didn't do well that year. I did really struggle. And then I switched schools and I was in an environment where I was supported and I had started to learn some study skills. And I was able to like catch back up and be successful again academically. But it was like another one of those processes where it was really difficult to accept that I had to study, you know? I had to try at something I had never had to try before.
Yeah, that makes so much sense to me. No matter how deep I dig, no matter how much effort I put or how confident I am, sometimes I need to learn something new.
Yeah. And then when I got to my adulthood, I don't know how I got this idea in my head. I don't know where this came from, but somewhere along the way, I began to feel that it was embarrassing for an adult to try to build a skill or learn something new. Which obviously is not true.
I'm so happy to hear you say that out loud, Maya.
Because it is embarrassing.
Speaking truth.
When we talk about like the chess community, right? And adult improvers and even chess Twitter or these online spaces, I feel like that is an invisible sense that is in tension with a lot of pressure to be really good and have a high rating, but an equal sense of mortification mm-hmm. about what it means to be a quote unquote adult improver mm-hmm. or to try. Yeah. I think you're hitting something that a lot of people actually might really relate to.
Or even as simple as losing to children and how a lot of people seem to hate the idea of losing to children, even though they're the ones who are improving the fastest, spending the most time in chess, and probably the people you should be the least ashamed of losing to. But there's something about they're a kid and I'm an adult and this is embarrassing.
Well, I understand why you would feel embarrassed, because it's like, well, they're a child and they're learning faster, whatever. But I also was a child. So I had that time plus all my adult time.
I'm not embarrassed about child JJ's lack of, I don't know, I really liked playing Star Fox 64 and I wouldn't trade that for 50 rating points.
But you know, it's just, I understand how somebody could feel embarrassed, mm-hmm. but I don't think that anybody should. But I had this realization, right? That I thought that this was embarrassing. That yeah. horrified me. It really disturbed me that I felt that way. You know, I was like, this isn't aligned with who I thought that I was.
Right.
I don't want to be that person that looks at somebody trying and is like, loser, how embarrassing for you. And simultaneously never picks up a skill, never learns anything new. Like, that's what's embarrassing.
Yeah.
I felt like I had to activate, you know, I was like, we need to get this feeling out of me. Mm. I need to pick an activity or a skill or whatever.
Exposure.
Yeah, exposure. And I need to genuinely try at something. And it could have been anything, but I picked chess because I have this history and I do love chess, even though there was like a painful aspect in my past. And I went on the internet and I found, you know, like I just collected like a bunch of links to different chess coaches, like maybe 12, 15, you know, a bunch of tabs. And then I sat down and like went through a bunch.
Did you literally Google the city that you live in, chess coach? Like, how did you go about that?
I definitely did that. I definitely was like, Astoria, New York, chess coaching. Like, is there a club around me? Whatever. So I did look into that, but pandemic, very COVID conscious. Very quickly, I was like, oh, doing it remote, doing this online would be better for me. And I had a friend who, okay, going back. So everybody at my job, all of my friends know that I love chess, right? The World Chess Championship was in New York several years ago. And I was watching
2016.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, because it was the first year that I was at my job.
Carlson Karjakin.
Mm-hmm. I was watching like the game on my computer while at work. And somebody was like, oh, like, hey, your boss is calling your name. And I was like, ooh, I'm in trouble. And so I went into his office.
ADHD trauma response.
I was like, I think I'm in trouble for watching chess on my computer. And he was like, why aren't you at that? Like, why aren't you at that event? And I was like, oh, because I have a job assisting you. So I have to be here like all the time. And he was like, if there are still tickets available, like, would you like me to get you one? And I was like,
wow.
I was like, David, can I hug you? And he was like, sure. And I went to the game the next day. And I did make several friends while there.
You just showed up in a place and everyone loved you. Go on.
And so I was following them on Twitter. And so, you know, they follow people, you know, the like Twitter chess circle, you kind of like, it was just easy to see people talking about coaches and all of that. Oh, and also in my year abroad, I participated a lot in like a women's focused chess cafe that existed in London at the time. And so I was just hearing about people and I made a bunch and I went through them all. And I was like, this kind of JJ Lang is my favorite one. That's the one I picked.
We need to pause right here, right now, Maya. Let's embarrass JJ as much as possible.
Okay.
Okay. Absolutely.
I'm so curious because you're very good at expressing yourself. If you can try to articulate what gave you that feeling like, oh, this is the right chess coach that I want to work with. And why was it JJ?
I remember that your website was like very spare, you know, it was like white background, black text. And so I didn't feel overwhelmed. You know, everything I needed was right there.
This is how I get ADHD students.
And the way that you described yourself and your philosophy seemed so encouraging and kind and like the opposite of what I was used to.
Right.
With my other chess coach.
You will never be a master, smiley face.
Yeah, exactly.
Hearts on like, face emoji.
Yeah, I won't. I never am gonna be a master. So like the whole point of this is accepting that and having fun with it anyway. And I felt like, yeah, your spirit really shone through the way that you described yourself. And I just felt very strongly that we were gonna vibe and we were gonna like each other. And I was right because yeah. I like you and you like me. So
that's true.
And I'm also here.
Yeah, Julia, thank you for setting this up for us. We really appreciate it.
It's okay. I have such sidekick energy. I like really lean into it. Don't worry.
See, I feel like that is simply not true. And you have true, like main character energy yeah. in the best way.
I have a real aversion. I have no desire to be perceived. And I think I've moved through my world and I forget that people can perceive me and that allows me to show up as myself. So then when someone from across the bar is like, hey, you, I see you.
No, you don't.
I feel like a pit in my stomach. And I'm like, you need to not do that today.
How do you feel about like public speaking? Like, are you okay with public speaking? Because it's a different mode, you know?
Yeah. And I don't feel like the center of attention. What I'm presenting, the information to me is the center of I get to talk about my hyperfixations. Mm-hmm. I'm not being evaluated on who I am as a person. So it feels more about them as an audience in some ways. I'm trying to make things feel like a dialogue.
That's so interesting. I feel like you would be a really, well, would you are a teacher. I bet you are a really great teacher because you do have this ability. Like when I listen to you talk about chess, it's like, I want to go play chess right now, you know?
That's such a nice compliment.
I'll be like driving in the car, listening to Chess Feels. And I'll be like, man, I wish I weren't in this car right now. I wish I could play a game of chess. Like I'm invigorated, you know?
I feel that too, though, when we record the pod, but I feel like I react that way to JJ.
So one thought I had is something I was thinking about making Maya do is give us a rundown of her thoughts in chess and literature media representation as a editor.
So
maybe if you want to give us a quick hit. So early pandemic would have been Queen's Gambit. More recently and not on as large of a scale would have been the young adult romance novel Check and Mate by Ollie Hazelwood. And then anything else you'd want to add in there, Maya, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I will. Maybe I don't have like as many thoughts about these pieces of media as I should, but I'm going to talk about children's literature in general for a
Great.
Moment.
Perfect.
My attitude towards books for children is that every book is some kid's favorite book, you know? Like, yes. You can pick up some random book off the shelf where, you know, like a book that just has absolutely no appeal to you whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And some 9-year-old out there was like, this got me excited about books, you know?
Wow,
like, this got me excited
so
to read.
True.
And I genuinely believe that the best thing that you can do for a child is to help them become a lifelong reader. You know, every metric shows that people who become lifelong readers are happier, they're more successful, they make more money, like they are more empathetic.
Higher average ratings on Uber.
Higher average chess rating.
Mike, can I pause you? You've just
Please.
Said something that I think about a lot, that they're more empathetic. Really fascinates me because something people will ask me in my career. I remember I had an end of the year review with a supervisor when I was still in grad school. And this question kind of came up, what makes you good at what you do? And I think the single thing which has helped me most to be a really successful clinical psychologist is reading, is literature. And I feel like I was expected to say like, oh, it's some part of this program has really helped me. I don't believe that. I firmly believe deep down in my heart that as a therapist, the thing which makes me good at my job is my ability to try to understand someone's perspective, to have language to very complicated and very difficult to articulate human experiences. When you're describing a lifelong reader, that was me. I was the kid with my head in a book. I have a lot of language and I have a lot of representation of what life can look and feel like. And I think it literally gave me my career, because what I need to do as a psychologist is really deeply see and understand somebody.
It makes me so happy to hear you say that, like truly so happy, because it does kind of, I don't know, it makes me feel like you were right. Like it's true. The thing that you spend all your, you know, like
you are
the
right.
thing I've dedicated my career to. Like hearing you say that is like, that's exactly what I want to accomplish. And the fact that that was accomplished for you, like really just like puts like a light on my spirit, you know, like that just makes me so happy. Books help us understand ourselves. They help us understand the world and their entertainment and their yeah. fun. Like, I cannot believe it.
I can't think of anything better in all my life. Yeah.
In children's literature, we have this concept of windows and mirrors, in that books should be windows for children. They should let them see into another life, another experience. And they should also be mirrors. You know, they should reflect that child's experience back to them. And that's why it's important that we publish diversely.
Mm. That's incredible.
Thank you. I didn't come up with it, but it is incredible.
I think you have the coolest job in the whole wide world.
Thank you. Well, I can send you some books because I have the connect. So recommendation. Focused by Alison Gerber is a fantastic book. It's middle grade, so that's age like 8 to 12. But look, listeners, you might be like, I'm an adult. I don't need to read this book for children. Your inner child is still with you. Like, the books are good. Just like, you know, have faith. Read books for children. They're great. Yeah, it's time to overcome, you know, that feeling, that embarrassment. It's about a girl who desperately wants to keep her spot on her school's chess team, but she has undiagnosed ADHD it's making it hard for her to succeed academically. And so they're going to remove her from the team. And so it's her journey of getting diagnosed, learning what works for her, how she learns so that she can like keep the spot on her team, and like hopefully they can like win their tournaments, and it's great. It's lovely. And actually, interestingly, that book is why I got diagnosed with ADHD, because it was a mirror when I thought it was going to be a window. But I was like, oh, this is familiar. I should maybe talk to somebody.
What was that process like to start to understand yourself that way and get a diagnosis?
I felt so intensely grateful because I spent a lot of my life feeling like I was lazy, you know, like, look, I used to be good at everything and then I wasn't anymore. And I guess I'm just lazy because I'm like too bitter about not being good at everything that like I can't like get it together in the same way.
I can't get it together.
No matter how much you want to.
Man, I think I've quoted on this podcast saying those words, that sense of, I know there's a certain way I'm supposed to show up and I can white knuckle it for a very short period of time, but I cannot do it. I cannot do it the way it seems very easy for other people around me to do it.
It seems so easy for them. And then so quickly, you feel like, well, what's wrong with me? You know? And because I can't do what they're able to do. And it was like an interesting kind of role reversal of, I was always able to do things that other people weren't able to do. And suddenly, like, you know, the switch had flipped. The day that I started taking medicine, you know, like the first day I tried Adderall and I thought like, oh, I should like go do that. And I just got up and did it.
Uh-huh.
What? It's so difficult. When you're unmedicated, even if you want to do something.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with wanting. I mean, that's literally how we diagnose, because the whole idea is that I can't put my attention where I might want to for a lot of good reasons. if it's not really inherently stimulating.
Yeah. Or if I don't feel like intense pressure, you know, like the ticking clock.
Right. It can be the pull of the interest, or it can be a push of anxiety, which also feels very arousing. It is arousal. It is stimulating, although the valence of it is not quite positive, but nonetheless.
Yeah. And so that was the experience I had when I tried medicine. And I was like, oh, other people are able to just do things. And I felt like, oh my God, I've been playing on hard mode. And I didn't know. And I'm so grateful that I don't need to feel like the guilt and like sense of shame that I had been feeling shame. Before. Yeah. You know?
That like, really resonates.
There is nothing wrong with having ADHD. Like, I just feel like it's neutral. It is what it is.
Yeah.
And if something's neutral, you don't need to be ashamed of it. And so I was able to not fully kind of free myself of those feelings, because you can't set something aside that is so ingrained that you're so used to, but it opened the door to like this new level of freedom and this new way of seeing myself.
Yeah, freedom.
And so, yeah, I would say that I just felt so glad that I was diagnosed. But I want to loop this. I want to loop this back to chess. Okay, children's literature. We have windows. We have mirrors. Blah, blah, blah. Queen's Gambit and check and mate. I feel like in the same way that every book is some kid's favorite book and it's going to hopefully get them excited about reading, the true accomplishment of these pieces of media to me is that they got people excited about chess. Like, yeah, I happen to really enjoy both of them, but even if I didn't, I would be like, I'm so happy they exist. I love them. Yay. Because they got people excited about chess and talking about chess and conceptualizing chess in a different way. Because we have this idea of chess as being for like boring, dusty old men. Like, and that is not the reality. You know, chess is for everybody. Like, it's for everybody.
Yeah, you said that so perfectly.
Thank you. It really opened the door for people to feel like they could get into this, and it was fun and it was cool. And I love that. The Queen's Gambit, I do feel some bitterness because
JJ, you're the dusty old man right now.
I consider myself a shady bitch, but I will accept the identity you force on me.
I feel that we all contain multitudes, you know? So when I first started at my job, I pitched a book that was about a young girl who traveled the world playing chess tournaments, who was underestimated because of her gender. And I titled that pitch The Queen's Gambit. And nobody believed in it. Okay. Nobody saw the vision. And little did I know.
I believe you. I hope you know that instantly. I have nothing but belief in you.
I think it could be something.
Like, little did I know that, you know, once The Queen's Gambit came out, I didn't even know that for a while that that was based on a book also titled Queen's Gambit. So regardless, it was already done. But I didn't know that at the time, and neither did they. And people were just like, there's no market for chess. Like, people aren't interested in chess. And I was like, chess is like one of the world's most popular games. Every school has a chess club. What are you talking about?
That's right.
Like, just because you don't like chess does not mean that children don't like chess or
and
that they won't
even
read
that
a book.
You don't
about.
Like chess. You just don't know. You never tried it. And I bet if you did try it, I could get you to like it. I'll show you.
Yeah.
Later.
Or you'd hate it so much, but you wouldn't be able to stop playing. Like, that happens too. And I was so, you know, I was so junior. It was my first year in my career that I just didn't know how to navigate and get a project through anyway. Now, if there's something that I really believe in and my team like doesn't see the vision, I can pull it off.
Like, lesson learned. Those people owe you an apology. Let the record.
They sure do. Let me tell you, once Queen's Gambit came out, they were like, you need to bring that back, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, I won't. Absolutely not. Because if we do it now and the book comes out 2 years from now, 2 years after the hype of the Queen's Gambit, the way the market is going to see that is just like, oh, you missed the boat. Like, the hype is over. And it's pigeonholed as a chess book that came out too late, where really, it's just an amazing story. And chess is part of it. Like, now you have to wait longer so that it can stand on its own instead of in the shadow of the Queen's Gambit. And check and mate, honestly, I still think we're kind of close to the Queen's Gambit, but Allie Hazelwood is like a mega best-selling author in her own right, and therefore it was going to stand on its own anyway. You know, it wasn't going to be in the shadow. It would only benefit from Queen's Gambit. And it's a great book, and it's really fun.
This, to me, though, feels kind of like the way we talk about a lot of things in the chess space, like YouTube channels, Twitch, even podcasts. We act like it's so saturated, but I just don't think it's subtractive. People want to engage with it. It's not like once I read one chess book, I never want to read a chess book again. If I really like it, I might want to read six or seven dozen more.
Yeah, I saw a post somewhere once that was like, why do people talk about growing the game? I don't care about growing the game. Like,
hashtag shrink the game.
Yeah, like what do I care if more people play chess? Like, enough play, so I'm fine. And I was like, look, our whole perception of the world is so different. I can't even engage with this idea. Like, if you don't see the benefit to sharing something that you love and that has, and that like can improve your life, then I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, it's like, I can't teach you to care about humanity, but
yeah, bummer. Bummer that you don't want to connect.
But I can put you on mute. Who do you have on Twitter mute? Maya, that's what I want to know.
Okay, I've blocked Nigel Short like a long time ago. Nice. Because I got into a Twitter fight with Nigel Short years ago in like 2014, 2015. Mm-hmm. And we were like, we were fighting, whatever. And then I tweeted something completely unrelated that was about how whenever you, or at least this was like my experience at this time in my life, whenever you would hear about a prophet, it would be a man. And I was like, why are all the like supposed messengers of God's word men? Like, isn't this weird? Like, isn't this suspicious? So I was just like having this thought. And Nigel Short replied to that tweet and was like, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, Nigel Short, get off my page. Leave me alone. I don't want to talk to you anymore about chess. And I definitely don't want to talk to you about like profits. Like, get out. And that's when I blocked him because I was like, stay away from me. Talking about dusty old man.
Anyone who is an enemy of yours is an enemy of mine. I've always liked Nigel Short a lot and just really enjoyed his content and all of his astute progressive takes. But now that I know he's rubbed you the wrong way, maybe I'll switch sides.
I'm so glad that we could bring you to our side in this.
We know about the obituary he wrote for Tony Miles, right? When we're talking about like the biggest misses.
JJ, when you sent that to me, literally I fell off some kind of cliff and I was like, actually bad people do exist.
It's like when you think he can't have like worse takes than he does.
Yeah, some of this has to be a bit. He has to be laying it on thick for attention. And when I read that, I fell out of my fucking chair.
I'm not even going to say what's in it, but if you don't know about the obituary for Tony Miles that Nigel Short wrote, hard recommend.
Some people, like we, as people who, you know, are as good as we can be to the best of our ability. We don't want to believe that other people are that bad. But yeah, I am not a person that like really believes that punishment is very like effective or helpful. Like that's like the way that I tend to think of things. But then Nigel Short, I'm like, I don't know. Who's to say? Fuck that guy.
Yeah, I don't think it sounds effective. It just sounds fun. Like better than the alternatives, like a silver lining.
I'm open to it, is the point here.
Did you mean like a kinky way, right?
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Push me against the wall. That was one of my best tweets. That was from the pod account. Please tell me, JJ, I did that from the pod account.
I think you didn't.
Speaking of things that are mildly spicy, I have to tell you my least favorite part of Check and Mate. Every romance novel has a moment where you're like, this is too ridiculous, actually. Like, it'll be try to be sexy, and you're like, no, the illusion is shattered. And in Check and Mate, there is a scene where our main character is playing chess, and the love interest comes behind her and sits in the same chair with her, just like shimmying himself down behind her, like between her back and the back of the chair, just like slot right in there. And I was like, this is ridiculous. This is not sexy. This is so dumb. Illusion shattered.
Wait, was that it? That's all he did? He didn't like...
Well, you know, there was like motion. Like, it's YA, so they don't get very explicit. Like,
I see.
Yeah, but...
Okay. I thought that this was going to go in a different direction. I was just like ready for the sentence not be over.
No, I was just like, that's so stupid. Like, when would you ever... If someone's sitting in a chair, when would you ever be like behind...
In middle school, sharing a seat is at least second base. I get it.
But then you're side to side, at least in my middle schools, not front back.
Well, I already know you didn't go to a very good middle school, Maya. They were not supporting you.
It's true. It's true.
You should have seen the way we sat in seats at my middle school.
I feel like we've gone off a lot of different directions.
That would be B. This is the kind of thing that I don't have a good sense for, that I've had to learn an algorithm in adulthood. Like, you don't just share seats.
I'm affectionate, but I do like my space. I'm not a seat sharer.
Yeah, yeah. I like my space too, unless you're my best friend and then I want to sit in your lap a little bit.
A little bit. My best friend and I met at a summer camp, and we went back like year after year. And there was one year where our bunks made like an L shape, you know? And so our heads were like together. And one morning, I woke up in her bed and she woke up in my bed. And neither of us remembered the swap. And we were like, how did that happen?
Glitch in the matrix. But,
yeah. Interesting. Or maybe like one of us like moved on over and then the other was like, I'm getting out of here. Like, I'll go to your bed, I guess. Who knows? Mystery. Histoire. Anyway.
What else, JJ? Anything? First off, Maya, this is like amazing.
I am really glad to hear that, because I was like, man, I hope I don't fumble this and fumble my burgeoning friendship with Julia.
You can't like, fumble it. Once I'm attached, I'm a secure attacher. Like, you're either in or you're out. And Maya, you're in, but you've been in. This was not an interview.
I'm honored. I was an anxious attacher for a long time. And I think I might like be graduating into secure attachment.
Maya, that's
like,
so
I'm not
cool.
Sure. But I think maybe. I'm like, am I growing?
I think
as a
maybe
person?
For sure. I get those vibes from you.
Thank you. We'll see. Time will test me. It's so interesting how we can see it different ways, because I'm like, I feel like my version of clinginess is like, tell me again that like everything is good. Like, I can't hear it enough. My best friend and I, her name is Olivia. Liv, we just cannot behave when we are together. And we are like that level of like clinginess, but it's mutual. It's with each other. It's if we go someplace.
That's true love.
Yeah. If we go someplace with a third person, we will sit in the back seat together and have them drive and just like talk to each other.
That's heaven on earth. Liv, that is your person, which obviously makes me insane with jealousy. Dump her. I'm here now. Just kidding. Can I be part of it though? I want to like get in the middle.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I don't know. Is there like a normal way that you guys wrap this up, or?
Is there anything you wish that we asked you?
What do I wish somebody would ask me? Maya, do you two happen to have a podcast? Oh my gosh, thank you so much. Listeners, you happen to be a fan of The Twilight Saga by Stephanie Meyer, or if you happen to hate The Twilight Saga by Stephanie Meyer, I would really recommend that you listen to my podcast with two friends, Twilight Faves. We reread, relive, roast, and defend The Twilight Saga. We have now reread and recapped all of the books, and we are rereading Twilight again because we just feel like there's more to say about Twilight. So you can find me there if you'd like to.
Does it hold up on a reread?
Twilight? I mean, I've reread that book probably more than any other book. So absolutely it does. It's a rich text, I would say. You find something new every time you delve in.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
What other things to wrap up? Is there anyone you want to challenge to a 21 game blitz match online?
Ooh, is this in this hypothetical question, like, would they accept the match?
Yeah.
Okay. I would pick like Bill Gates. You know,
he's
that
so
video?
Bad at chess. Yeah,
exactly. You know that video of Magnus Carlsen beating Bill Gates, and all the comments are like, wow, Magnus really is a genius if he can beat Bill Gates. If I beat Bill Gates 21 times, so many people who don't know anything about chess would think I was so smart.
This is debatable, but something about beating Elon actually feels like it would piss off an even more satisfying group of people.
My fear, that one, the stakes are too high, because it's like, what if I panic and lose to Elon? I wouldn't be able to live with myself.
Where is that little girl Maya confidence?
It's, but like, I don't, I.
Where is she? Bring her out.
Maybe her shine dimmed just a tiny bit.
Maya, don't say that. Oh my God, I'm a therapist. Okay, now I can't sleep at night.
how often do I think to myself, Maya, don't say it. And my mouth is already open. I'm already saying it.
It's already coming out.
Constantly.
The train left the station.
Yeah. Things happen. It's fine.
This is why I love Discord. JJ's the one who got me into Discord. And when I realized that I could edit messages, it was like, never mind. But it's actually making all my problems worse because now I'm sort of like, I don't need to inhibit. I can be as disinhibited as possible and I can edit on the back end. So it's sort of like the way Blitz makes all your chess habits worse.
What kind of Discords are you hanging in? Where are you hanging out on Discord?
I'm in the Wiccaface task force.
Okay.
Obviously. I have like 5 individual friends that I actually talk to.
5?
JJ is all 5 of them.
Okay, thank God.
Yeah. I'm gonna scoop my way in there. You're gonna have 6 friends. We talk chess and books and life and crashing dates with you two.
Maya, we're gonna hang out.
Yeah, we are.
When are we gonna hang out?
When are you next finding yourself in New York City?
Honestly, now that I live on the West Coast, worst coast, that's a tall order, but I'll keep
you. You know what? I'll come to you.
Hell yeah.